elf than she had ever been. He was proud, in spite of everything, and it made him devastatingly sad. She had worked so hard and fought so long for this. They were going to take it all away. This was the first time the three of them, once inseparable, had been in the same room since Larda left. Everything had changed, and nothing had. She was still choosing Valahia over them. Radu was still supporting Mahmed, and Mahmed was still demanding they both be his. The stakes had just gotten higher. Radu sighed. It could have been such a different reunion. Well, no, not with Larda, but it should have been different.
We came because you forced us to. We did not want this.
Larda shook her head, but there was something evasive in her expression that hinted to Radu she knew he was right. I only sped up the inevitable. He was never going to let me have this.
All you had to do was make concessions. We would have given you...
It is not his to give me. Valahia is mine, and I owe nothing to him or anyone else.
That is why you will lose it, Radu shouted. Because of your refusal to bend, because of your damnable pride. We offered you peace, and came armed with usurpers to betray and replace me.
Radu threw up his hands in exasperation.
You cannot accuse us of betrayal. Not when you agreed to sign a treaty and came here to assassinate Mahmed.
Larda opened her mouth to argue, then stopped. A shocking giggle escaped her mouth. It made her almost girlish.
I suppose that is true.
Caught off guard, Radu found himself returning her smile.
We always have contingency plans, you and me. That has not changed.
Larda's smile deepened and darkened. You have no idea what is coming.
Are you certain about that?
Unease crept into Larda's face. Her deep-set, hooded eyes narrowed, and her full lips pressed together. Radu had a shameful thrill that she now respected him enough to question herself. He would have given anything for a moment like this as a child, even more for a moment where she looked on him with pride for besting her. But he would never get that.
Enough, Mahmed said. I am taking you prisoner.
His face was etched with anger, something cold and hard growing beneath the softness of his cheeks.
I should kill you right here for this.
Larda tilted her head, gazing up at him through her thick lashes. You really should. She gave him a banal, blank smile, as though she were the woman she should have been, a woman like their mother. Make Radu do it. Radu bulked, stepping back. He glanced at Mahmed, seized with a sudden fear that Mahmed might be angry enough to demand that. But his friend shook his head.
I would never ask that of him.
Larda's smile turned coy. Radu saw a hint of himself there, as though she were imitating him. You would, if you thought it was your best option. Do not pretend to put his feelings ahead of your own. You never have. You cannot.
Just as you cannot release your insane fixation on this country!
Mahmed took a deep breath, trying to get his anger under control. The men around them shifted uncomfortably. This was not the aloof, self-possessed sultan they were used to serving under.
I offered you the throne.
You offered me nothing. I do not already have. Her upper lip curled in defiance, returning her to the Larda that Radu knew. And you have given me nothing I cannot find elsewhere with far less hassle and far more pleasure. Mahmed's eyes widened in shock and hurt. Then he shifted from Mahmed to Sultan with a lift of his chin and a firming of his jaw.
Bind her and take her to the wagons. We will make quick work of the rest of this campaign while she is sent ahead to Constantinople.
Larda smiled at Radu, showing all her sharp little teeth. "Tell the Dinesh boyas their kind does not live long in my Valahia."
Radu wanted this to be over. He wanted to sleep. He knew he would not be able to. Not tonight. He would change his plans and request to escort Lada back to Constantinople. Knowing her, she would goad the guards into killing her. She would never admit it or even realize it, but she needed his protection now. He would see her to prison, safe at last, once and for all. And then he would be finished.
"Lada, how long would you say I have been in here?" she asked, her expression thoughtful.
Radu gestured for the Yanacheris to take her.
"Be careful. We will not hurt her,"
Kirill said, nodding respectfully. Lada widened her stance and bent her knees.
"That is not what he is afraid of."
A deafening explosion rocked through camp, cutting Radu off. The tent shook, several panels detaching from their stakes and blowing inward. Radu ducked, covering his head, as the chandelier came crashing to the ground. By the time he straightened, the two Yanacheris closest to Lada were already dead.
"Protect the Sultan!"
he shouted, pushing Kirill toward Mehmed instead of toward the fight with Lada.
"All of you, around the Sultan!"
Radu drew his sword. Lada paused, two bloody daggers in her hands, three bodies on the floor. The other Yanacheris had rushed Mehmed out of the tent.
"Will you really fight me?"
she asked, pointing one red blade at his sword. Then she ran right for him. Radu twisted to the side, holding his sword to block her blades, not to strike her. She stopped just short of him, giving Radu a look that made him feel like the child he had been, crying himself to sleep at night and never measuring up.
"I thought not," she said.
Then she darted out of the tent and into the night. Radu dropped to his knees, hanging his head. He had a sword to her daggers. He could have won. Again, he had had a chance to end things. Again, he had not made the choice Lada or Mehmed would have in his place. How many lives would pay the price this time? Struggling to his feet, he followed Lada into the burning night.
27. One day south of Turgoviste.
Lada knew it would be impossible to find Mehmed in the dark and the chaos, though there was significantly less chaos than she had been counting on. Nearly all Mehmed's men were staying in their tents rather than rushing out into the fight. It made things harder. She should have known better than to count on a lack of discipline in Mehmed's men, though. He always controlled everything. Why would his men be any different? The gunpowder stores had already been attacked. The explosion was good timing, too, as it allowed her to escape. She knew she would find a large group of her men attacking the pack animals and wagons. There were 5,000 already here, or on their way, every soul she could muster streaming out of the hills and attacking from the darkness. She heard their shouts, their music playing, using the Yanacheri's own tactics against them. As soon as there was enough chaos in camp, Lada would send up the signal for the rest of her troops in the hills to attack. 5,000 more. It was only 10,000 against 50,000, but it could work. If everything fell into place, Valahia could defeat the most powerful army in the world. She could beat Mehmed. Of course, things were already off schedule. The biggest tipping point into mayhem and despair was supposed to be the death of their sultan and leader. She had not accomplished that. She ground her teeth in frustration. Radu had beaten her. Then again,
"The Sultan is dead!"
Lada grabbed a torch and set the nearest tent on fire.
"The Sultan has been murdered!"
she continued thus, running through camp screaming about the death of the Sultan while ensuring as many men as possible could not stay in their tents. There was more activity around her. More and more men entered the mayhem.
"Hey!"
one shouted, grabbing her arm. She stabbed him in the side
and kept on toward the animal pens. Toward the back of the camp, the fighting was happening in earnest. She had hoped to draw the bulk of Mahmed's men here with her initial 5,000, mire them in fighting, and then hit them from behind with the reserve. From her vantage point, it looked like the Ottomans had several thousand engaged in combat. Not enough yet. Crossbow bolts, fired by her men in the hills, sang through the air, claiming Ottomans running around her. She risked being claimed by one herself, if she did not hurry. Women screamed as they ran through the main section of tents. Seeing them, Larda wanted to laugh. They were not Ottoman camp women, but Valachian women, armed to the teeth, pretending to flee while cutting down as many Yanicheris as they could. When they reached the far end of camp, they would circle back and meet up with the forces coming down from the hills. Everywhere was confusion, chaos, blood and fire. For once in her life, Larda longed to join the women. They were doing exactly what she wanted to. But she was needed elsewhere. She was not here as a soldier, but as a prince. She skirted the tents, then ran into the hills where she found her rendezvous point with Bogdan and her other leaders. They were waiting, anxiously watching the progress of the assault. Larda shouted as she ran up. "Anyone with a Yanicheri uniform, go into camp to take up the cry that the Sultan has been murdered." Several dozen men took off. Bogdan raised his eyebrows, hopefully. Larda hated to admit defeat. She shook her head. "They were waiting." He looked concerned, but he nodded and moved on. "Are we ready then?" Larda bit her lip. She wanted more time for order in Mahmed's troops to break down. But she also knew if they waited much longer, they risked the opposite. The Ottomans could organize and form ranks. The fighting had intensified on the supply end of camp. It was a full battle now, one her men would not be able to sustain for long. "Do it," she said. Bogdan gestured to the trumpeters. The notes were brassy and clear over the tumult of noise in the camp. Larda watched the hills, waiting. Runners stood beside her, ready to take commands at a moment's notice. From here, she would direct everything. From here, she would watch Mahmed's army fall. Something was wrong, though. "Do it again," she said. Again, the signal sounded. Larda's heart sank within her. The camp burned, but not bright or fast enough. Her men at the wagons fought, but not enough Ottomans had been committed there. Where were her boyars with the rest of her men, with the Hungarians Matthias had sent? As the trumpets gave one final, trembling plea, Larda remembered Radu's response when she said he had no idea what she had planned. He had. He had known all along. Her eyes desperately combed the hills for some hint, some sign she was wrong. That they were coming, that they could end it all tonight. If they had but trusted her, if they had followed her plan. The faithlessness of men to take whatever false advantage Radu offered instead of choosing the valiant course. The course of blood and victory, the course of struggle and triumph for Valachia. No one ever chose Valachia. Larda dropped to her knees, throwing her head back to the smoke-choked stars. She screamed her rage and despair. Then she stood and drew her sword. If no one would help her, she would do it herself. She took two steps forward when someone grabbed her around the waist. "Let me go!" she shrieked. "Sound the retreat," Bogdan said, his voice soft. Larda twisted, snarling like a feral thing. Bogdan held tight, talking in an even, soothing voice. "They are forming ranks. No help is coming. But I count nearly 15,000 of theirs dead, countless pack animals slaughtered, their gunpowder stores destroyed. Now we run." He paused, then spoke again. "If we escape, we win." "We did not win!" Larda kicked once more, then went limp, only Bogdan's arms holding her up.
We could have destroyed it all. We should have. Sound the retreat, Bogdan shouted over his shoulder. He lifted Larda onto a horse and got on behind her, squeezing her leg in clumsy reassurance. Your welcome awaits them at the capital. We run and fight again. Larda heard in those words her entire future stretching out before her. She would never be able to stop fighting. Even victories that should be hers would be taken from her by faithless men. They would forever choose each other instead of her. Choose treaties and tradition over a genuine chance for change. It would always be a fight. Hunyadi had told her as much. Her dreams of decisive triumph drifted up like sparks, only to go dark and cold as ash. 28. Outside Turgoviste. Hamza Pasha slammed his fist down on the table.
If the forces in the hills had followed her plan, we might have lost. She had women fighting. Women! I lost Spahis because they were too shocked to raise a blade!
Radu dreamed of lighting the table on fire, throwing it into the smoldering mess of their supply train. He loathed this table and the map on it, and increasingly the people around it. Ali Bey's smile was as pointed as the tip of a sword.
That is a failure on their part, then. My Yanicheris overcame their shock quickly enough. Do not pretend your men turn the tide. We only triumphed because of Radu's deal with her allies, said Ishak Pasha, the most measured of the three.
Hamza Pasha blew air out between his lips with a dismissive noise, as though Radu's efforts in persuading the Bazarab boyars to hold back were more of a lucky accident than a battle-winning triumph.
He cannot use the same trick at Turgoviste. We cannot count on anyone else betraying her. The commoners worship her.
Radu glanced at the tent's door flap. Mahmed was not here. Radu had not seen him since the attack the night before. No one had, other than his guards. Kirill had reported back to Radu that Mahmed was unharmed and, apparently, perfectly capable of going right to sleep. Radu rubbed his forehead. It ached from exhaustion and too much inhaled smoke.
We have the advantage with a siege. The advantage is always with the defenders. At Kruj, I was at Kruj, Radu said, cutting Hamza Pasha off. He was tired of being dismissed by the old man. Outside the walls. And I was at Constantinople inside the walls. I am no stranger to sieges.
He offered no smile to offset the harshness of his words. He knew what so many of these men still thought of him, that he only led his horsemen because of his beautiful face and favor with the Sultan. But favor with the Sultan was how any of them led. And Radu realized that, despite his 18 years, he truly did have as much experience as any man could be asked for. He felt it thick and dark and choking in his dreams, a constant heaviness in his mind, both awake and asleep. Yes, he had far more experience than any man could be asked for. Radu took a deep breath and spoke in a more measured tone.
Turgoviste has none of the natural advantages of Kruj, and certainly none of the defences of Constantinople. It is smaller than both. The walls are hardly formidable. They will be able to see us coming, but that is no secret. And as was clearly demonstrated last night, Larda does not have the loyalty of nobles or European support that Skanderbeg or Constantine did. No one will come to her aid. She lost half her forces when the Bazarabs abandoned her. We killed 3,000, which, as far as we can tell, leaves her with only a couple of thousand to command.
Hamza Pasha scowled.
We have lost 15,000, and supplies and animals. We can afford 15,000 with greater ease than she can 1,500.
Radu cringed at the callousness of treating men's lives as simple calculations. War made monsters of them all.
When we take Turgu Viste, and we will, no matter what she has planned, that will be the end of it. We will have the capital. We can install Aron and Andre in their places, and Valahia will return to its vassal status.
Ishak Pasha tapped a finger against the table.
But the boyars and their men are not entirely off the map. If they were swayed to us so easily, they can be swayed back. They may already be behind the walls in Turgu Viste. What if she... Her strength is not walls. It never has been. Doubtless she will have some plans, but she cannot fight the way she has up to now. This is where our training and skills matter. This is where she realizes she cannot keep the city in the face of the might of the Ottoman army. No matter how many men she can pull together.
The tent flap opened. Radu was shocked to see Mara Brankovic enter with a swish of layered skirts.
"I had thought," she said, "to be catching up to a triumphant army already in control of the country." She pursed her lips in disapproval. "If I had known I would have to join the camp, I would have delayed my trip."
Radu pulled a chair over for her. She sat down primly, glancing over their plans.
"Hungarian forces are here?"
"Yes, but they have not been in play. Yet."
Radu had to admit Ishak Pasha was right. They could still decide to support Larda. In the end, the Bazarab boyars who had led them were not in charge. The Hungarian king was. And if he sent word, they would do what he asked.
"Send Corvinus a gift," Mara said, opening her lace fan with a snap of her wrist.
"What?" Radu asked.
"Matthias Corvinus. Send him something luxurious, beautiful. Oh, I know. Send him a jeweled velvet pillow for his crown. He will understand the meaning."
Ishak Pasha scowled, shifting his weight angrily from foot to foot. He had several old wounds that made travel painful and difficult. But such was his loyalty to the Empire. He refused to let Mahmed campaign without him.
"Why would we take time from war planning to send an enemy king a fancy gift?"
Mara leaned conspiratorially toward Radu.
"I have just heard the most wonderful rumor. King Matthias was sent a rather large amount of gold from the Pope to aid your sister in crusading. And, by a shocking coincidence, he somehow came into the funds to buy his crown back from Poland."
Mara grew serious once again.
"By using that gold for himself, he has stolen from the Pope. It will not go over well among his European allies. We should make certain his loyalties remain firmly divided."
Radu toyed with a heavy ring.
"And it would not hurt to include a note about how much we look forward to a long and peaceful relationship with Hungary's rightful king, whose crown we acknowledge and celebrate, and whose borders we recognize and respect."
"With just the right amount of threat implied, should he set foot over those borders into conflicts that do not concern him."
Mara beamed.
"I love playing this game with you, Radu. With one gift and one letter, we can take Matthias Corvinus off this map."
Hamza Pasha stood, stabbing a finger toward her.
"This is not some game to play at, like, courtesans."
Mara demurely covered her face with her fan.
"It seems to me that whatever way you are playing it has not served you particularly well up to now."
Hamza Pasha stormed from the tent, followed by a less angry Ishak Pasha.
"Pay Hamza no mind," Mara said. "He is still sore that I rejected his offer of marriage."
"He wanted to marry you?" Radu asked, surprised.
The other men around the table were leaving to begin the enormous task
of repairing what could be salvaged and getting the camp on the road to Turgu Viste. Larda had done a tremendous amount of damage. They would limp all the rest of the way, but they would get there.
Oh, yes. Dear Hamza was madly in love with me.
Mara paused.
Sorry. I mean, he was madly in love with my position as a favorite of the Sultan.
She smiled wickedly, touching her powdered hair as though there were ever a strand out of place.
It is my most attractive feature.
Radu held out a hand to help her stand. I am quite certain your most attractive feature is your remarkable mind.
If I ever found a man who wanted to marry me for that, I might just break my vow to never wed again.
Really? She laughed.
No. But speaking of wives, I know a very pretty one who is only 2 days behind me. You should send word to delay her. This is no place for women.
Radu put a hand to his forehead in exasperation. In the madness of the campaign thus far, he had not even thought to warn Nazira to delay her journey. They had counted on being well settled in Turgu Viste by now. Radu pulled out a sheet of parchment and cleared a place at the table to write his letter before something else demanded his attention.
Thank you. I will.
If this is no place for women, though,
never fear on my behalf. I volunteer to take Matthias Corvinus his gift, in person. This country is simply awful, Radu.
I do not understand how it produced you. Radu finished his hasty note. It also produced Larda.
That makes far more sense.
As Radu offered his elbow to walk Mara out of the tent, his thoughts returned sickeningly to the callous way he had referred to his brothers who had lost their lives. He treated them as numbers. After all he had seen, after all the lives he had watched depart this world, he could not afford to think like that, because once he started, how would he stop?
God above! Kiro lifted one arm to cover his mouth and nose. What is that smell?
Radu smelled it too, but he could not account for it. He was with his men, riding in advance of the rest of the army. Their force was big enough to face any direct attack, and fast enough to get word back should something arise they were not prepared for. Facing Larda, they could count on being unprepared. In the distance, Radu could just make out the dark smudge of the capital with a tree-lined road leading up to it. Aside from the skinny trees along the road, most of the forest around it had been cleared. It was smart. Larda had an unobstructed view of the land around the city, but it also meant she could hide nothing from them, either.
Cautiously, Radu said, gesturing for them to keep moving forward.
They had not seen a soul yet, though the sky was splattered with dark birds like drops of ink. The last time Radu had seen so many carrion birds had been in Constantinople. He could not quite catch his breath. Their cries pulled straight from his worst memories. They rode closer, everyone gradually slowing their pace. A sense of wrongness grew as steadily and strongly as the stench. Behind him, Radu heard men gagging. Kirill leaned over and heaved. Still they had seen no one. Not a single soldier, not one trap or ambush. Radu undid his turban and wrapped it around his nose and mouth, though he could still taste the putrid rot through it. Then at last, like a landscape of nightmares, Radu was close enough to see the odd, skinny trees lining the road. They were not trees. Evenly spaced and planted with all the care of an orchard. Corpses were impaled on stakes. Some were newer. Some so far decayed, they had to be weeks dead. And all of them were Ottomans.
Go tell the Sultan, Radu said.
He wanted to turn away. He could not. He rode forward into hell, the faces of the damned marking his progress with hollow, rotted eyes. They were spaced so evenly, it was easy to keep count. Tens, then hundreds. 1,000. At 5,000, he had reached the houses on the outskirts of the city.
The buildings were all cold, abandoned. Every door was open. He knew he should send men in to check for soldiers hiding inside, waiting to ambush them. He could not manage to do anything but keep moving forward. The sheer overwhelming wrongness gave everything a dreamlike haze. He could not feel his limbs, could only see, could only smell. At 10,000, he was finally close enough to make out the gates to the inner city. They were open. The stakes there were so close together that he could not see between the bodies. It was a solid wall of rotting flesh on either side, only the sky above visible as he passed directly into the city. No sounds but the harsh cries of the birds and the quieter but far more piercing noises of beaks tearing flesh and sinew from bone. Radu knew his horse was making noise, but he could not hear it. He did not know if any of his men were still with him. He could not stop, could not look to either side. He was compelled forward as though, by making it through this tunnel of horror, he could wake up on the other side, back in a world that made sense. A world where the gate was locked, the walls were manned, and there was something concrete and understandable and human to fight against. He reached the castle. 20,000 stakes, as near as he could tell. Had it been just this morning he resolved to never again view men in terms of numbers? There, in front of the gaping castle gates and doors, on a stake above all the others, a final corpse. Radu knew that cloak, knew those clothes. He was still sitting on his horse when Mahmed reached him. There were new noises now, retching and curses, and a few quiet sobs. Of course there were more men here. Mahmed would not have come alone. Radu did not know how long he had been here. "Is that..." Mahmed did not finish his sentence. "Kumar," Radu whispered. The man who had given him Islam as a balm and protection for Radu's terrified young soul. The man who had become Radu's brother in spirit and in law. The man who had come here in Radu's place. Kirill spoke. Radu had not seen him join them. He could not look away from where Kumal's kind eyes had once been. Did they rot out, or had they been eaten? It seemed important to know, but Radu had no way of finding out.
"All clear. There is no one here." "How can we fight against this?" Mahmed asked. "How can we take a country when she simply walks away from the capital? How can we ever defeat someone willing to do this?"
His voice broke as he swept his arm outward.
"Just to send a message! How could a woman do this?"
Ali Bey's voice was filled with equal parts wonder and disgust.
"She is not a woman,"
a soldier near Radu said, spitting. Normally a soldier would not dare speak in the presence of the Sultan, but there was nothing normal here.
"She is a demon."
"No."
Radu closed his eyes against the forest of corpses grown from the indomitable will of his sister.
"She is a dragon."
29. Outside Turgoviste. It had been all Bogdan could do to persuade Larda not to dress as a Yanacheri and enter the city with Mahmed's men. She wanted to be there. She wanted to see it. To revel in their shock at an unguarded capital. To see the looks on their faces when they realized they could not fight her. To see their despair when they were confronted with how far she would go to protect what was hers. They could have the city with her blessing. After all,
Turgoviste was not Valahia. Larda was Valahia. Instead, she sat in the hills and watched from a distance, imagining it, relishing it, and looking on in astonishment and delight as Mahmed's army stopped, then turned around and headed back toward the Danube. Finally, Mahmed knew the truth. She would never be his. Her country would never be his. She had won. All it had taken was 20,000 dead Ottomans on stakes. And Mahmed thought she did not understand the power of poetic imagery. 30. Outside Turgoviste. It took 20,000 stakes to make a single point. Larda was not ever giving up. Radu did not know which had shaken Mahmed more deeply, seeing so many of his men impaled in horrific defiance of Muslim burial traditions, or understanding that Larda truly had intended to kill him during the night attack. Their retreat from the city had been necessary for both morale and health. At best, the tenor of the camp was one of unease. Radu heard a lot of rumblings about going home. They had to decide what to do before opinion shifted too far in one direction or the other and made the men unruly. Mahmed had relocated to a far less ostentatious and more anonymous tent. They were there now and had been for hours. Radu waited in silence next to Mahmed, who sat with his back straight, his eyes on the carpet. He picked mercilessly at the gold stitching on his robe.
"How can I fight this?" Mahmed finally asked. This was the first time since the night of Larda's first visit that they had been alone. Mahmed seemed a different man. Radu, too, felt different, far older again. How many lifetimes could he age over the course of a few years? "How can I fight this?" Mahmed repeated. But Radu did not think Mahmed was asking him. Radu suspected that until the double blow of Larda's true intentions and her horrific display, Mahmed had not actually taken any of this seriously. It had been more than a game to him, but far less than a war. He had faced Constantinople with religious determination. This had been all about getting Larda back. And now Larda had made certain they could never forgive her. All hope Mahmed had held of reunion was as lifeless and rotten as the sentinels at Turgoviste. The camp had moved far enough away from the city that the smell was no longer making men sick. Radu had his own men, 4,000 skilled and disciplined fighters, digging graves instead of riding into battle. But his men were not alone. Ali Bey, Ishak Pasha, Hamza Pasha, they had all spared as many as they could for the work of giving the Ottomans proper burials. Shifts were taken with solemn sadness, some to dig, some to guard, and some to pray.
"We have Turgoviste, but it does not matter." Mahmed's voice was as haunted as his eyes. "I do not know how to fight a war where tactics are useless, where numbers gain me no advantage, where gates are left open and cities are guarded only by the accusing dead of my people. Tell me how I can fight this."
He looked up, pleading.
"You cannot."
Radu knelt in front of Mahmed. His friend leaned forward, resting his head on Radu's legs and curling in around himself. Radu put a hand on Mahmed's turban. Radu's fierce desire was gone, his passion dulled by the long, heavy wear of time and disappointment. But his tender affection and deep respect for his friend, for the Sultan, would not leave him without a fight.
"If we stay," Radu said, "we will have to chase her into the mountains. It will be months, perhaps even years. She will wear down your men with time and starvation, sickness and frustration. We cannot fight on her terms and win."
"What should I do then?" the eyeless face of Kumal, rose unbidden in Radu's mind. He closed his own eyes. It did not help. Lada could not win this. Radu would not let her.
Go back to Constantinople. Burn the cities you pass, take whatever livestock is left, and everywhere you can, exaggerate the numbers. Have Mara tell all her contacts what a great victory this was, how easily you restored Valahia to its vassal status, and put Aron on the throne. But Lada won! And who will tell that story? Her peasants? Her hordes of landless, nameless people? How will they travel to the Pope, to the Italians, to the rest of Europe to tell of her victory? Rumors will spread, certainly, but all evidence will be in our favor. Our man on the throne, in the capital. Our triumphant march home. If we go, we leave Lada free to do it all again. No.
Radu let out a heavy breath and smoothed the edge of Mahmed's turban.
I said we could not fight on her terms. We fight on mine instead. With your permission, I will keep my men and stay behind to work. I can steal the country from my sister through the one thing she never could beat me at. Archery, Mahmed said, his dark attempt at humor acknowledged by both men with wry smiles that faded as soon as they appeared. Sheer likability. I will defeat her through manipulation. Politics. Saying the right thing at the right time to the right people. She will fight you. She can try. But she will fail. She tried to dismantle the foundation of a building she was still living in. She tried to be prince while taking apart the entire system that supported the prince. I will find every enemy, every boyar who has lost a son or cousin or brother, every noble who rightly fears for their place in her new world. I will use Transylvania and Hungary and Moldavia. I will steal every stone of support she has until she is standing alone in the ruins of the new Valahia she tried to build. And then, Mahmed sat up, locking his eyes onto Radu's. She will never stop. She does not have it in her. And what foolish hopes I nurtured that she could return to us are gone. Mahmed had been firmly against killing Lada. Radu saw that his position had changed. They had so much in common, his sister and his sultan, and now they hated with as much determination as ever they had loved. The bodies were piling up because of it. Radu knew he had faced this before, knew he had been too weak to make the right decision, knew he could not afford to do so again with so many lives at stake. It had been selfish of him, avoiding what had to be done. What Lada would do in his place. Radu could be strong for this one terrible task. It would destroy him, but he could no longer ask thousands to pay the price of his tender conscience. Then I will do what must be done. I will finish it.
31. Ponari Fortress. Lada leaned over the stone wall where it jutted past the edge of the cliff. The Argesh River curled distant and silver beneath her. Her fortress was finally complete. It would be her refuge, her sanctuary, her rallying point. Breathing deeply of the cold air still wet with morning mist, Lada fortified herself with the same unassailable strength as her fortress. There was work to do. Her men and women were scattered through these mountains in groups of 200. It was easier that way, both logistically with camps and strategically with remaining hidden from enemies. Even if one camp was discovered, they would not decimate Lada's reserves. She and her followers could hide here for months. Not that she had plans to do that. She turned to Bogdan and Grigor. She had promoted Grigor after his success in defending Bucharest, though he annoyed her. Everyone annoyed her for not being someone else she loved better.
Have word sent to the Pope of our victory, she said. Make certain he knows what we did. 15,000 of their men dead, and the entire army turning tail and running. Perhaps with these kinds of results, he will send us more than praise. Praise neither feeds men nor kills enemies. I want money and soldiers. Grigor shuffled his feet in obvious discomfort.
I cannot read. All right.
Where is Doru? Larda asked with a sigh. He can write. Bogdan's blocky features twisted in awkward confusion.
He died during the night attack.
Larda had not noticed. She waved, irritated with herself for not knowing, and with Doru for dying. Then you write it, or find someone who can. The Pope must help us. I want real power behind us when we return to Turgu Viste. We have to plan for taking it back. She knew the bodies had been removed and that a small force had been left behind. But surely they did not think a few thousand Ottomans could stop her. Not now. Larda's fingers tapped the sheathed sword at her side. And I want all of the Bazarab Boyer's men. It had been the Bazarabs, led by a man named Galesh. Weak, faithless Galesh, who had held their forces back and cost her a true victory during the night attack. They were hiding somewhere in the mountains, too, using her same strategy. That would not work out as well for them. She had briefly considered killing them, but it was a waste of resources. She would just cut off the head and absorb the body. I want all of the Bazarab's men, along with Galesh's head. That is our first priority. Clean your own house before helping the neighbours, Juana said with a pleasant smile, passing Larda a steaming bowl of mush and a side of dried meat. Or in our case, clean our own house before attacking the neighbours for trying to steal our things. We also need to retake Kelia from my cousin to teach Moldavia that our borders are inviolable.
Do you want to kill him? Bogdan asked.
Larda frowned. She really was not certain. She could not blame King Stephen for his actions. She would have taken advantage of the same opportunity had their situations been reversed. There were several cities that passed between Moldavia and Valachia every few decades that she would be happy to reclaim. And in spite of his betrayal, she still liked her cousin. He reminded her of Nikolai. She set down her bowl, her appetite gone. We will deal with that when the time comes. Now, closer to home, do we have any allies in Transylvania? Grigor shifted, obviously uncomfortable with delivering bad news.
You are not very popular there.
Still, even after I sent the Turks weeping back to their own lands.
We can send some men and see.
Larda nodded, then hesitated. Perhaps do not send our best men. Pick some who are dispensable to go with you. Her own record with responding to envoys was less than friendly. She did not want to gamble anyone who would be hard to replace. Grigor's eyes were wide and terrified. She could not understand why. Oh, Larda said, remembering her words. She picked her bowl back up and shoved it at him. Not that you are dispensable. I am certain you will be fine. Eat something. She paced back and forth along the length of the wall, overlooking the cliff's edge. Is there any chance of getting Skanderberg to join us? Bogdan shrugged.
I do not have any Albanian contacts.
Larda waved a hand dismissively. Of course he did not. She wanted Stefan here. Where was he? Nikolai would... She stopped pacing and rubbed the back of her neck. She needed her own Mara Brankovic. She even found herself missing Darciana. If Darciana had been raised with an education, she would be better than any of the men serving under Larda. It filled her with pulsing anger, knowing how much potential was ignored among her people simply because of their sex. She tugged her hair off her neck and tied it back with a strip of leather. Pick someone dependable and send him to Skanderberg. It is unlikely he can help. He is still fighting the Ottomans on his own land, but we may as well pursue every potential ally.
Speaking of allies, what of Matthias Corvinus?
Juana reached up to redo Larda's hair, but Larda slapped her hands away.
By his request, the men he sent were to be commanded only by Galesh Bazarab. So I do not know whose cowardice and betrayal denied us our complete victory. That of the Bazarab boyars alone, or Matthias's too.
What does Matthias have to gain from your loss?
Juana shoved Grigor's untouched bowl back into Larda's hands.
Larda wrinkled her nose and forced down a few bites. Eating and sleeping were chores. She wished she could assign them to someone stupid, like Grigor, so she could continue her work all hours of the day. She feared if she stopped moving, if she stopped plotting and planning, then... she did not know. But the fear was constant and nagging, and the only way to outpace it was to never stop. What does Matthias gain? I do not know. A free Valahia would only benefit him. It keeps his borders further buffered from Ottoman advance. But I cannot pretend to understand that man, if only his father were ruling. Larda allowed herself a moment to imagine what it would have been like had Hunyadi been waiting in the hills. How tremendous their victory, how complete the destruction of Mahmed's armies. Everyone would have remembered that night, and their names forever. But then again, had Hunyadi been fighting with her, doubtless all credit for winning would have gone to him. Only he would have been remembered. The guards presented a panting boy covered in a light sheen of sweat. It was no small task climbing up the mountain to the fortress. Most of her prisoners had died hauling stones up. The boy bowed low, holding out a leather satchel.
"Letters, my prince!"
Larda took them. One from Mara Brankovic she tossed aside for later, with a renewed surge of envy that she did not have her own Mara. Radu. Radu would have been her Mara. Her grip tightened, creasing various missives from people whose names she did not recognize. But at the bottom of the stack was a letter sealed with a coat of arms featuring a raven. Matthias. She sliced it open with her dagger. Larda drew her eyebrows close, anticipating bad news. For once, she was surprised.
Matthias praises our victory. He claims to have been unaware of the Bazarab's cowardice and gives us the last known location of the men Galesh was leading.
Had he merely claimed not to know of the betrayal, Larda would have continued to suspect. But if the location proved accurate, Larda could kill the remaining boyars and take both their Valachians and the Hungarians into her own ranks.
"He is surprised by how quickly Mahmed ran," Larda laughed. "Clearly Matthias does not know how deeply Mahmed cares about the cost of things. But Matthias is emboldened. He is willing to commit more men and money. He thinks we can retake the Danube and deny Mahmed that passageway into Europe. With control of the Danube, we could damage his entire vassalage system."
Larda lowered the letter, her mind spinning with possibilities. She had longed for Hunyadi at her side, but perhaps Matthias would prove the more useful of the two after all. He brought European connections. She brought ferocity and the ability to lead men against Mahmed. Together, they stood a real chance of freeing not just Valahia, but also the rest of the European countries that Mahmed held under his thumb. What a blow that would strike against Mahmed, against his treasury, against his faith, against his pride. Larda could taste it. She wanted Valahia free, yes, but if she could have even more, she would take it, gladly, gleefully even.
"Matthias wants me to ride to his court, so we can plan, and then I will return with his men."
If she left now, she could be there in a couple of days. It would give them time to come up with a strategy and track down allies. She had no doubt Matthias, with his noble face and gilded tongue, could do better than she, and she would be back in Valahia before the remnants of Mahmed's men could set up a good defense in Turguviste, unchallenged. Mahmed had left, but she was not naive enough to trust that he was truly gone. She tucked the letter into her tunic. "I will leave immediately," Bogdan nodded.
"I will come."
"No. I need you to go after Galesh and the Bazarabs. This information might be a week old. You need to find them now. Send word when they are dead, and the men are yours."
"I do not like you going alone. I do not trust Matthias."
"Neither do I. But for now, our goals intersect. I will not let this opportunity fall."
"Grigor can handle going after Galesh, so that..."
Larda grabbed Bogdan's arms, cutting him off. "I trust only you to do this." It was true. So many of her men were lost to her. But Bogdan remained. She knew that, of every man in the world, he would be true.
"I will attend to her,"
Wana said with a reassuring pat on Bogdan's arm. It made Larda realize how little they touched. Wana was far more demonstrative with Larda. So was Bogdan, for that matter. Whether it was because Larda had been Wana's charge, or because Bogdan had been taken from her at such a young age, Larda was the center of their mother-son relationship. She pushed away a pleased smile at the thought. Wana threw her shawl over her shoulders and tied it in place.
"A lady should not be alone, ever. Not in a foreign castle."
Larda snorted a laugh. "If someone threatens my honor, will you kill them with your knitting needles?" Wana grinned, warm wrinkles around her eyes.
"Do not doubt what I can do."
"I never would." Bidding farewell to Bogdan, Larda and Wana climbed down the mountain with 30 guards. Horses awaited them at the nearby village, so remote the villagers had not bothered evacuating. Larda sat straight and eager in her saddle. For the first time, going to Hungary did not feel like a punishment. It felt like victory. 32. Turguviste. Radu could not tell if the stench of death lingered in Turguviste, or if his memory of it was so strong that he would never be able to walk through the city again without gagging. The work of clearing the bodies, taking them down, burying them with their heads toward Mecca, and giving them the respect they deserved, was finished. It had been a week of non-stop, wearying work. Because they had no grave markers and could not identify most of the bodies anyway, Radu had them buried in the sections of forest that had been cleared to make the stakes. They planted seeds and saplings between each grave. Someday a forest would grow and hide his sister's abomination from the heavens. Until then, they all carried it with them. Radu paused at the castle gates, staring at where Kumal had been displayed. He would never tell Nazira. He would carry the memory himself. There was no reason to burden her. If Radu were still Christian, he would dedicate a church to his brother-in-law. As it was, whenever he prayed, he dedicated himself to Kumal's memory. It was not enough. It would never be enough. But it was all he had to offer.
"Sir," Kirill said, inclining his head smartly, then walking at Radu's side. Radu had promoted him to his second in command. "We have finished the last of the clean-up. What now?"
"We need to find my sister. Until we know where she is and what she is planning, we cannot accomplish anything here. No one will return to the capital if the threat of her wrath looms over it, but I cannot see any way for her to retake it with the numbers she has."
Radu had been alert and waiting for attacks, but nothing had happened. Larda had vanished and taken with her everyone and everything they needed to fight.
"Just because I cannot see it, though, does not mean she cannot find a way. More likely, though, is that she will try to draw us into the mountains, where she will have the advantage. I do not particularly want to stumble into any more welcomes she has designed."
Radu avoided the castle door. He had no wish to go inside. Instead, he climbed a ladder to the wall that circled the castle. He leaned over the bulwark and looked out at the city. It was still nearly empty. It had been easy to house his men,
They had an entire capital to choose from. We should act less like Ottomans and more like Valahians.